All right, let's get you guys started real quick here.
All right,
so,
all right.
Firstly, thank y'all for hanging
far
in
away.
There. It's been a long day.
It's been a long day.
We're
a good day, though. A good
day.
Day.
Yeah. Absolutely. So to close this out here at just awesome day of company presentations, one-on-ones, the whole bit, we have a very fun fireside Q&A with Matthew, hosted by Matthew Martin, portfolio manager at Reevemont Microcap Fund with Kits Eyecare.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. So I'll just start. Oh, is this working?
We got another one if you need one. Backup. We got a backup.
Test. Okay, all right. Okay, so I'll just start with the disclosure. My fund is a shareholder of Kits. So, Joe, let's start with just an overview of Kits, like a quick elevator pitch in case anybody's not familiar with the company.
Sure, yeah. We launched Kits in November 2018, almost 6 years in the market, under a simple mission. We want to make eye care easy, prescription glasses, contact lenses. And we do it by taking all the waste out of the system so that we can pass that savings on to customers with no sacrifice on quality.
Awesome. So where I want to take this Q&A first is talk a bit about the story of Kits. So you went public in January 2021. You raised $55 million at $8.50 a share. It was near the peak of the microcap market, and then the stock went on and declined from about 10 bucks to 2 in the next year and a half. What was going through your head at that time, and maybe were there any lessons learned from that experience?
There were some tears, yes. There were some tears. My mom bought shares and so reminded me that the stock price had gone down. Fortunately, she held on. I think we were pretty convinced that we were building the infrastructure that would power the industry. And so we bought back some shares at two, unfortunately probably not as many as we should have. But you know, in the process, we learned a lot of lessons around setting expectations really clearly and then delivering on them. But really, you know, between 2021, when we IPO'd in January, and Q1 2022, that was our investment phase when we were building out our glasses business and our optical lab. And so we knew once we got to the end and crossed the chasm and opened up that optical lab here in Vancouver, we knew everything would get cheaper and faster and higher quality and more profitable for us. And so, you know, we just kind of put our heads down, got the lab done, and then just had the conviction that once it was open, things would turn. And from the day we opened the lab, the new mega lab that we have here in Vancouver, we posted 8 consecutive quarters, including this one, of about 30% organic growth, all with positive adjusted EBITDA, and kind of no end in sight as far as we could see. And then, of course, you know, there's the highlight of, well, you were at $8 and then you went down to two. Was that painful? It was definitely painful. But as, you know, as we look back, I saw an article a couple weeks ago. There was, you know, about 15 consumer stocks that went public around 2021 across the U.S. market and Canada. And there's two of us now above the issue price. And you know, we feel like we're just getting started. So I think that's, you know, that was really the journey.
Interesting. And then, well, you touched a little bit on it, but walk us through the next 2.5 years. Your stock goes from $2 back to over 10. You know, what did anything change in the business, or was it just investors' perception of your business that changed?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is a tough category, optical. It's not like T-shirts where, you know, you could start a T-shirt company, you know, in your basement and outsource and plug into customers. There's a lot of infrastructure and foundation that needs to be built in this category. And you really need to be big to get leverage on the model. And that includes building technology, accumulating the data, building the data infrastructure, data warehouse, business intelligence layer on top of it, getting to scale on number of customers that are active in Vision Corrected, and then, you know, the structure of the lab and building up a collection of glasses. And so we were pretty convinced that we needed to put our heads down and complete that foundation. And that foundation would just be a super moat for us, where could someone do the same? For sure. It would take 5 years, maybe 10, and it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars to do. And it would be very difficult. And so, you know, is the business more valuable now than it was 2 years ago? Definitely. Over 60% of our revenue comes from repeat customers every quarter, every year, even as we grow. And the infrastructure is built now to allow us to grow to $500 million in revenue. And so the CapEx has largely been deployed. The investment phase is behind us, and we're just super excited to now grow into that. So now, in our minds, now comes the fun part.
Yeah. Do you feel like investors misunderstand or maybe underappreciate some parts of your business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that this is a tricky category, and I think what's appealing about it is that everyone is frustrated with it. You know, 7 out of 10 adults require glasses or contact lenses to get through the day. And, you know, almost everyone we talk to has got a frustrating story about, oh, gosh, you know, I spent $500, it didn't work, I had to take it back, it's all these trips back and forth to the glasses store. And so I think that's what's understood, is that the category as a whole is very broken. I think maybe what's not as understood in the investment community is this tidal wave of opportunity that's coming to us through the millennial consumer. And so the millennial consumer is now the biggest part of any category, virtually, except maybe hearing aids, but definitely an optical. And the millennial consumer is about 72 million consumers in the U.S., about 8 million in Canada, and the millennials are now 28 to 43 years old. And that's just prime optical age. And so I think if anything is misunderstood, and these are customers who – They've told us they have no interest in going into a brick and mortar optical shop and buying glasses. And so if there's one thing that's misunderstood, it's probably that. It's this wave of what we call the customer of today, which is going to be the customer of the next decade and the decade after that, that's rapidly pulling the category online. But you don't see it in the headline numbers where the category is growing 3 to 5%. In North America every year. Online all of a sudden is growing 10 to 12%. Brick and mortar is declining. So you have this brick and mortar infrastructure that's kind of caving in on itself, where every year there's fewer customers. And every year there's higher costs to run a brick and mortar store. And so who pays for all that cost and all that waste? Well, consumers. And so the value delta is just going to continue to grow online to brick and mortar. And more of these millennial customers are going to represent bigger and bigger share of the category and are going to continue to pull it online.
Yeah, I would agree with that because, you know, when I talk about kits with other investors, the same pushback comes over and over. It's like people are really buying glasses online. Like it won't happen, or people won't move online. But definitely it's happening. So,
well, you know, probably one of the things that we – you know, had to get across as a company is just, you know, the move away from telling the story about the category and just demonstrating the results and then just showcasing the results. Yeah. And once the results were coming in, we didn't have to, you know, many of the investors that we talked to just would never, you know, would never shop online for glasses. And so they were looking at it going, I don't know if I buy it. And when we look back to the first couple big investors we had come in, they said, okay, I'm going to try this out. And they went home and said, okay, what do? I get my prescription. Let me see if my kids can help me with this. And they asked their kids, and their kids were like, oh, kits. Yeah, no, we've been shopping on kits for a while now. And then the investor would come back and say, okay, now, you know, we see the opportunity. And But that, you know, that was probably, you know, our mistake early on, where it would have, you know, been beneficial to showcase better the millennial consumer and the results coming from that consumer, as opposed to, you know, convince the investor, no, everyone's going to do this, and
yeah.
When they themselves, you know, maybe were less likely to do it.
Yeah, it's funny because my mother shops on Kits, and I didn't know, and she showed up at Christmas last year with Kits glasses. I was like, what?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
She's been reading your excellent coverage.
Yeah, maybe, who knows. Okay, so you recently announced some new product innovations, like the smart glasses and color contact lenses. Do you see your ability to innovate and be nimble as one of your competitive advantages?
We do. We don't have, you know, we save in two areas. We don't have brick and mortar stores, and we have an automated lab. And we think that takes 90% of the cost out of the system and the waste out of the system. And so, and it also, you know, gives us maybe an unfair advantage in being nimble, where we don't have to send a sales force out to all of our brick and mortar stores to convince them on how to sell this new product like smart glasses. And so how smart glasses, and, you know, we'll see how fast smart glasses picks up. If you haven't tried them, I just encourage everyone to try the Bluetooth or video camera glasses. It sounds a bit strange, you know, have Bluetooth in my frame, but it's a real game changer when you put them on and, you know, you get a phone call or you just answer it with your glasses, or, you know, you need to check something with ChatGPT or with Google and you just do it with your glasses. It's kind of it untethers you from your phone. And so we think it will pick up and it'll be very exciting. But where we benefited from it is, you know, all of a sudden the optical category is cool again. And Meta or Facebook and Google and others are now developing to this form factor. Now, they have no interest in developing the actual, you know, acetate and hinges and frames or putting prescription lenses in. They want to create the electronics that go in and the cameras and the platform behind it. And so it's created a really interesting opportunity for us to be the prescription engine for that. So if you go on Meta and buy a pair of the Meta glasses, and they're excellent, it's about $350, and they'll come to your house in a beautiful Meta box, and you open them up, and you're like, wow, these are terrific. Unfortunately, I can't see out of them because there's no prescription in them. So now you have to, you know, go on Google, find a brick-and-mortar store, drive to it, give them your $350 glasses, wait a couple weeks, pay hundreds of dollars, and then cross your fingers they don't break them. And so what an opportunity for kids. You know, we sell the Meta glasses. It's one of our fastest growing products. And now you order Meta glasses on kits.com or kits.ca, and we'll put a prescription in them within a day and ship them to you at a fraction of the cost and in a day or two instead of a couple of weeks. And maybe the added benefit on that is it's a very technical assembly process because there's wires going through the hinges. And so you can't use a traditional assembly model to put a prescription in, otherwise you'll fry the electronics in it. And so it allows us to, for very low cost, invest in expertise in smart glasses and then, you know, be on the forefront of that wave. So it's only one of a couple of innovations we're working on right now, but we think it could be pretty material over time.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Can you share other innovations that you're working on?
Sure, yeah. We had our first ever investor day a couple of days ago here in Vancouver, and we walked everyone, about 50 folks, through our optical lab and our design center where we're designing new products. And then, you know, had some Q&A and a little presentation after. So we revealed a couple things. Contact lenses we're expanding under the Kits name in with a daily modality contact lens that, you know, in our first month, we hit our first quarter target, and so we're rapidly expanding that line. And we've introduced color contact lenses. So color contact lenses are popular in other regions. It's almost 50% of the market in Asia, the Middle East. It's bigger in Europe, and it's just been slow to come to North America. It's the same contact lens. You just get blue eyes or green eyes or gray eyes or brown eyes. And so we've launched Kits Color Contacts, and it's you know, it's only a couple weeks in market, but they're flying off the shelf. And so we're excited about bringing some of this innovation that the contact lens market has needed to the category. And then we've got a new product coming, or a new platform coming out soon, which we unveiled 2 days ago. It's called Kits Bits, and it's a personalized pair of glasses. So, it, you know, like on Crocs, where you can get those little jewels that go into your Crocs shoes and get all kinds of designs. Well, we've created the same platform and infrastructure with a pair of frames. And so different jewels, different symbols, and we're super excited about it. So that'll launch shortly. Not quite available yet, but coming soon.
As the COO of the company, what are the main KPIs that you track and why?
Yeah, we're fortunate to have a, you know, pretty small team, you know, for a business our size of just over 150 folks that, you know, work together as teammates, and we're happy to have a big employee share ownership plan. So roughly 2/3 of all employees are buying shares as each paycheck with a company match. So it's really created this ownership culture. So there's less of you know, a here's what we're doing, everyone go and do it. It's almost more, you know, we have a quarterly objective, then we have a couple North Star objectives. And our North Star objectives are Net Promoter Score. Our mission is to make eye care easy, and the best way to make eye care easy is to measure our Net Promoter Score. So that's a North Star metric. And then percentage of revenue from repeat customers. And it's our view that the best way to determine if you're giving customers a great experience is whether they come back or not. And so those are our two North Star metrics. And then underneath that, we've got a whole segment of metrics on making eye care easy that we measure and track regularly. But we also take that mission, Kits Makes Eye Care Easy, and flip it so that it can be, you know, top down or bottom up. So we ask every teammate that we have, whether they're assembling glasses or running an optical lab or designing technology, could your job be easier? What could you do to make your job easier or to make eye care easy? And we get some really phenomenal suggestions on operations, on technology, and on marketing.
That's awesome. Are there, I can pause here, are there any questions from the audience? So I'll just repeat the question. So how do you think about balancing investments in new innovations like smart glasses with the desire to stay profitable and increase profitability?
Yeah, profitability is pretty key for us. We've got in our minds this, I think it's kind of almost like a software industry term, the rule of 40, where the combination of your growth plus profitability could hit 40%, and we're not there yet, but that's, you know, that's on the frontier and something we're thinking about. And so, you know, 30% growth, 10% profitability, and you'd be there with 40%. So we're constantly toggling. Okay, could we grow faster? What's the cost of that growth? And what we've settled into is this pattern of kind of tinkering and proving out a model and then expanding it. And so, you know, an example is we have a direct partnership with insurance companies where we'll create an API so that a customer could just enter their account number and see immediately on kits.ca how much they have covered when it expires and then apply it at the checkout so they have no out-of-pocket. And so we tinkered on that for, you know, 6 to 9 months and tested it without a huge amount of investment. And then once we felt confident that the return on invested capital there would be really significant, well, then we expanded it. And, you know, this year we're happy to introduce the biggest partnership in Canadian history, I think, with TELUS Health. And so we've taken that same approach with things like smart glasses, where we've made a very, very small relative investment in learning and tinkering and understanding, while also offering customers the full range so they can buy a Meta smart glass, they can buy a Kit smart glass. And that small, relatively small investment in training and in inventory and design we think is going to put us on the front of the curve, but you know, but we're going to be really patient with that before we make a big push on it.
Any other questions? So the question is that the rule of 40 typically applies to software companies with higher gross margins. So could you get to higher gross margins over time and still fit that rule?
Yeah, we're ambitious on our both our gross margin growth plan and profitability plan. So it's our view that we could, but. Like anything that we do, we're going to do it gradually and with thought and intention. And so, you know, we look at items like gross margin as a bit of a balance between cost of acquisition and gross margins kind of comes together. And so it's our belief that we have the lowest cost of acquisition in the market. And part of that is we turn each customer into an influencer. And that first purchase then necessitates maybe a bit of a lower gross margin. And so so I think that's kind of part of our calculus as well. But over time, this category can be very profitable. I mean, we offered all of our kits, glasses, including prescription lenses, at $28, which is, you know, over 90% savings versus the market, which last year across the U.S., the average prescription glasses cost $350. So 28, obviously much, much lower, and delivered in a day or two anywhere in North America. And so, you know, we've tested, okay, what impact would $38 have once we get, and turns out, you know, not much. We don't see much demand decline at $38. And so, you know, I think we can kind of gradually toggle that up as long as we still feel like we're delivering, you know, 80, 90% savings. And with scale, and with a little invention to your question on lenses and on frames, we feel like gross margin 40-45% is very achievable. It's up to us to execute on it.
Anyone else? Okay, I'll ask one of mine. So you recently announced a secondary offering in which insiders are actually, I think it closed this morning. So insiders have sold a block of shares worth about $11 million. So can you explain this transaction and how did that come about?
Sure. Yeah, a very small transaction. Pre-transaction, insider ownership was very high, 79% of all stock owned by insiders. And we had a number of institutions that have been doing work on the company for a number of years, and we're interested in taking a position, and so it became clear that that, you know, opening up the opportunity for these partners to come in and work together as we take the business to the next level and the level beyond that would be productive. And so so there was a small, we've only done an equity raise once since we launched. It was the IPO. And so this was just, as you said, very small, secondary only, to enable a couple of like-minded partners to come in on the institutional side that we've been looking forward to working with for a while now. So that closed this morning, and we're super excited to welcome them in. That takes insider ownership down slightly from 79% to 75%, so still pretty high.
Yeah. Okay, closing question. As you look forward, what are you most excited about?
You know, I think now comes the fun part for us, where, you know, building that foundation is costly, it's exhausting, and it's misunderstood, where, you know, folks, it's maybe more accepted in the market to build a marketing organization or retail organization to build up that demand and then go into operations second. And it was the same. I was at Amazon before we started Kits, and it was the same misunderstanding of, well, why are you opening up all these fulfillment centers? Just get to that scale and lose a bunch of money and then figure out how to open up fulfillment centers when you need them. But of course, you know, once you have the fulfillment center, then you have the cost economics, you pass that on to customers and grow. And so we felt like it was the same for us. And so, you know, that while it was hard work and, you know, heads down, a little bit painful at times, it's so nice to be able to, you know, 2 days ago walk, you know, 50 folks through the lab, and just, you know, once you walk through our lab and design center and fulfillment center, you'll never look at glasses the same, because you'll never spend $300-$400 on a pair of single vision prescription glasses, because you know the cost is infinitely lower than that. And so now the fun part comes for us, where we can fill up that demand. And so that's exciting for us. And our marketing team came up with this really cool idea. We had a couple influencers that that really kind of took off, and you know, we posted about it, and I shared it in the presentation this morning. And that sparked this idea around, well, to start this movement, and it came in like, you know, the LA area, where this one local influencer was talking about it. And it sparked this idea, could we put an efficient, concentrated effort into one market at a time and really start that movement going, and then go down to sustained level of advertising, and then, you know, go back, learn, tweak, and then go to the next town. And so they've called it Own This Town. I think it's really, we tested it in Vancouver. It worked spectacularly well, and so now they're going into the second market, and it's just a unique tweak on marketing, where we invest not in mediums. We're not trying to hack Facebook or Instagram or any of these. We're going to customers and starting a conversation with influencers, you know, with, you know, maybe the mayor of the city, you know, and we'll do some stuff locally, and then pull back and then just seed it. So we're super excited about that. The team's identified 20 markets to go into gradually over across North America. So stay tuned.
That's awesome. Well, that's all the time we have. So thank you, Joe. It was a pleasure. And thanks, everyone, for attending.